From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is 91.3 KUAF, your source for NPR news and NPR programs since 1985. And this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, June 22nd, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. The Arkansas New Play Festival continues. This weekend, the closing events will be staged as part of the festival, hosted and presented by Theater Squared. Tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 each evening, Transatlantic, called an epic comedy spanning two continents, is back. It was also presented during the 2015 version of the festival as What Hath God Wrought. Saturday afternoon at 1, the Dramatists Guild of America will present a live version of their most recent print publication, The Dramatists. That's free Saturday afternoon, beginning at 1 at Theater Squared in Fayetteville. Later Saturday afternoon, the script We Swim, We Talk, We Go to War will be presented as a stage reading at 3:30 at Theater Squared. Saturday night at 6:30 is Comet Town, described as darkly hilarious. And then the festival will close Sunday afternoon with back-to-back presentations of The Furies and Visible from Four States. A complete rundown of plays can be found at ArkansasNewPlayFest.com. Ahead on today's Ozarks at Large, another annual summer event requires plenty of volunteer help. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda explains how volunteers helped make the Northwest Arkansas Championship stop on the LPGA Tour a reality. First, we have no definitive way of calculating this, but we suspect more languages are used more often in Northwest Arkansas than ever before. Later this summer, Melanie Carbine, a Marshallese language revitalization expert, will be here to teach free Marshallese language classes for school teachers and members of the public. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich tells us more.
Yakwe is lelo komule ne barnan alapkom eta in mali karbain is juan rikaki im rijeje ilokaji majol. My name is Melanie Carbine, and I am a teacher and an editor and writer in Marshallese.
Melanie Carbine, a Utah native, became fluent in Marshallese while serving as a Mormon missionary in the Republic of the Marshall Islands. Speaking from her home in the Washington, D.C. metro area, Carbine describes the Marshallese language as unique.
So Marshallese is an Austronesian Pacific Island language. It has a lot of NG sounds. It kind of rolls together, feels very fluid. It's almost more clearly understood when you kind of string the words together. And it plays a really important role in the culture since it has a strong storytelling base.
It's also, she says, structurally distinct.
In many ways, it has a completely different language structure. We have nouns, verbs, adjectives, adverbs, and prepositions in English, whereas in Marshallese, they have tense markers, pronouns. It's a more of a passive grammar structure as well, and a large emphasis on relationships between people.
Marshallese is a root language, she says, which is easier to memorize compared to English, which borrows from many other languages.
And really the only way still is full immersion. And while I can individually teach one person at a time and help them understand the language and approach it, I've been looking for a way to be able to reach more people, and I found an online platform, www.italki.com, where I'll be able to teach or offer Marshallese language lessons online.
Carbine's 10-week online course conducted via Skype will begin the end of August. She'll also be in Northwest Arkansas the first 2 weeks of August, doing language reconnaissance with members of the Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese, or ACOM, based in Springdale, in preparation for teaching several courses on the Marshallese language.
The first week, I am going to be coordinating with ACOM to work with interested Marshallese speakers, to work with them on how to approach teaching Marshallese to English speakers. And the second week, I'm working with, at the moment, Monitor Elementary School and Parson Hills Elementary School to work with their teachers to do an introductory course for Marshallese. And then the first week of school, I will be there to work with students and parents.
Carbine says the Marshallese language remains intact in the Republic of the Marshall Islands, but literacy is a problem.
Yes, so there's actually a very large difference in the literacy rates. While all Marshallese people are familiar with the Marshallese alphabet, being able to fluently decode and read text of any length is much less successful. In the islands, the graduation rate is less than 25% of people, and that is pretty much reflective of what reading skills are like as well, and reflects in the academic performance of Marshallese students in English-speaking schools.
While completing her master's in curriculum and education, Melanie Carbine, who also teaches school, edits and publishes iGemajam, a Marshallese quarterly literary magazine, now in its third edition. Plus, she's developing a Marshallese smartphone typing app.
Microsoft ScriptKey has a keyboard app where you can choose the language of your keyboard, and you can have 2 to 5 different languages at the same time. It's also predictive, and that was recently updated a couple weeks ago so that you can type in Marshallese using the Marshallese letters, and it's also spell checking against the word list compiled from the Marshallese English Dictionary.
Carbine's collaborating with Alfred Capel at the RMI Ministry of Education, who's developing a Marshallese language course.
Well, the Ministry of Education, with the help of Alfred Capelli as well, have been producing and publishing literacy materials for primary and secondary school, and that's available on codexcenter.org. I'll send you the information for that. And I touched base with him about the keyboard because we have concerns about differing typographies, but we also discussed coordinate our efforts to create Marshallese language or bilingual programs in the schools.
Melanie Carbine, who recently attended the International Conference on Language Revitalization of Indigenous and Minoritized Languages, is cultivating best practices.
I feel very strongly that it's important to preserve and continue to use the Marshallese language in speaking in community spaces and reading and writing. Not only for community purposes, but also for the continuation of the Marshallese community. But it's essential to their identity as a group and their ability to sustain their community despite climate change and migration.
The Republic of the Marshall Islands, 3,000 miles due east of the Philippines in the North Pacific, is comprised of a scattering of shallow atolls and islands, increasingly subjected to inundation due to climate change. As much as one-third of the population, 20,000 islanders, have relocated to the mainland U.S., California, Oregon, and Washington states, with most settling in northwest Arkansas. Due to the diaspora, Carbine says, the Marshallese language is endangered.
It's very easy. Within 1 or 2 generations, a language can be completely lost. Even if the parents are completely fluent and they speak sometimes to their kids, if they're not continuously or conscientiously speaking in Marshallese and using it every day, it's gone by the next generation. We see that with so many immigrant languages in the United States. It would not be surprising for that to happen.
When she completes her degree, Melanie Carbine hopes to open a language immersion charter school for Marshallese, perhaps in Arkansas. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to know more about the upcoming classes and Melanie Carbine's work in the Marshallese language, we've provided a link at ozarksatlarge.com. The 11th annual Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship returns to Rogers this week. 144 golfers competing in the 3-day LPGA tournament. All of them vying for $2 million in prize money. First round of play gets underway at Pinnacle Country Club tomorrow, and hundreds of volunteers have been working all week in preparation. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda met up on the golf course with a volunteer chairman yesterday to learn more about how local residents make the annual event run smoothly year after year.
Jim Taylor works at First Security Bank and is a longtime volunteer at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship. Taylor enjoys playing golf, and today he's participating in the Pro-Am competition.
Some folks had to reschedule, and so I live close by and could grab my clubs and work. It was actually just a fill-in. So
how are you doing? We're on hole 15?
We're on hole 15. And
are you winning?
So far, we're winning. Because we don't know what any of the other scores are.
When he's not subbing in on the golf course, Taylor serves as the tournament's volunteer chairman. He's filled that role for several years, but has been a regular volunteer since the competition's inception.
I started out as a walking scorekeeper and then became caddy master, and then the position opened up as far as general volunteer chairman. We're going to walk. Yeah. And that role involves kind of overseeing all of the volunteer operations for the tournament. I have a co-chair, Kim Ellis, who also works with us and is a general chair as well. But our goal is to make sure that the volunteers have a great experience, the fans have a great experience, and the players have a great experience.
To become a volunteer, you can fill out a form online and submit a $45 application fee, which includes two golf shirts, a hat, four daily grounds guest tickets, meals during shifts, and an invitation to a volunteer appreciation party. With more than 20 volunteer committees, participants have several activities to choose from.
You can be a walking scorekeeper, you can be in supply and distribution, and even if you know nothing about golf, there's things that you can do. You can be a marshal, you can come out and watch some great golf, you can drive a shuttle if you want, drive a golf cart and shuttle people from hole to hole. There's so many different opportunities.
Volunteers do not have to live in Northwest Arkansas. In fact, the longest distance someone has traveled to participate in the event is 1,536 miles. Volunteers are encouraged to work at least three shifts, which can last 4 to 6 hours. Taylor says that's not a problem for some people who like to come out all week.
We have volunteers that show up at 5:30 in the morning and leave after dark. So it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. But without the volunteers, there's no way that we could put an event like this on.
Over the years, Taylor says they've learned to be more efficient. In 2007, they had 1,100 volunteers. 850 people are supporting this year's event, and 60 of them have been a volunteer every year since the tournament started. While this number is lower than a decade ago, it doesn't count the volunteers being provided by local nonprofits to staff concession stands.
There's six different concession stands throughout the tournament this year, and those concession stands are set up with healthy, affordable food as an option. And then all of the proceeds from those sales go to that particular organization.
Over the last decade, the Northwest Arkansas Championship has donated more than $2.5 million to local charities. Taylor says supporting the community is just one of the reasons he returns year after year.
You build relationships with other volunteers. You build relationships with players. You build relationships just throughout the years. Plus, giving back to the community. We're going to give millions of dollars back to the community just from the income generated from this tournament, which is pretty awesome.
If you head out to the tournament this weekend, you'll be able to identify the volunteers by their matching purple polos. For more information about volunteering next year, you can visit nwachampionship.com/volunteers. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
In addition to the 3-day golf tournament, this weekend's events include a food festival, a 5K race, and a performance by Elle King at the Arkansas Music Pavilion. You can find out more about these events as well as when the Golf Channel will be providing national television coverage of the tournament at nwachampionship.com. Few other sports notes for this Thursday. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals winning streak is over at 8. Last night, the Nats dropped a 1-0 game to the Arkansas Travelers in North Little Rock. Tonight, the Naturals are in Tulsa to start a 4-game series with the Drillers. 14 current or former members of the University of Arkansas men's track program and 8 members of the women's team will be competing in the United States Track and Field Championships that open today in Sacramento, California. Former Razorback Sandy Morris, who captured the silver medal in Rio last summer, is considered the top contender in the women's pole vault. The championships run through Sunday. Much of the competition will be seen on NBC. The University of Arkansas swimming and diving team is earning an All-American Scholar designation. for accumulating a 3.53 grade point average. That team GPA was the second best in the SEC. Chad Spanberger, who led a late-season offensive charge for the 2017 Razorback baseball team, will next be playing for the Colorado Rockies organization. He's signed a professional contract after being drafted by the Rockies earlier this month. And the second night of the Rodeo of the Ozarks begins tonight at 7:30 at Parsons Stadium in Springdale. Competition continues nightly through Saturday evening.
Guitarist Alex Wentz in the background, one of the performers in this summer's KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz, and I'll feature more music from artists who'll be performing in this summer series. We'll also hear from Conrad Herwig, Warren Marsh, vocalist Lisa Henry, and more. Shades of Jazz right here on KUAF.
Still to come on today's show, take Ed Sullivan, vaudeville, and a rapid-fire approach to entertainment, leaving out commercials and intermissions, and you have the last Saturday variety show.
And each of the acts has a very short amount of time to perform. The first three acts only have 10 minutes. The last one has a little bit of leeway depending on how fast the show is running, but we try and make sure everything's moving very quickly.
Houston Hughes explains why slam poetry, music, and catfish all work together so well once a month. That's later on today's Ozarks at Large. Opera in the Ozarks presents its 67th summer season, June 23rd through July 21st, with 22 performances at Inspiration Point in Eureka Springs and Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. The season features 50 vocalists from across the nation. Productions include Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro, Bizet's Carmen, and Carlisle Floyd's Susanna. Tickets and information at opera.org. 91.3 FM KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group. Highlands Oncology's cancer specialists provide comprehensive, collaborative care, allowing patients and families to stay close to home. With locations in Benton and Washington counties, Highlands Oncology is helping patients fight the battle every day. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Clouds are expected tonight, with lows in the upper 60s. Tomorrow, clouds and possibly rain. There is a 40% chance of showers or thunderstorms throughout the region tomorrow, with highs in the upper 80s. Tomorrow night, clearing, lows around 60. And Katie Hendrickson will end another week of Note tonight, beginning at 8 on 91.3. And she'll do that with some music you can't refuse. Nino Rota's Godfather Suite, plus a new recording of Bartok's Fifth String Quartet, and more. Of Note with Katie Hendrickson, every Sunday through Thursday night at 8 on 91.3 KUAF.
I'm Robin Young. The U.S. is facing its worst teacher shortage since the 1990s. In Colorado alone, school administrators are trying to fill 3,000 jobs.
We need to really make that profession attractive and resilient and really be able to have a living wage to do it.
That's next time, here and now.
Today from 1 to 3 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. In just a moment, how Fayetteville-based technology could make a difference in wastewater treatment, and a conversation with Hugh Kincaid about his retirement from the Bank of Fayetteville. That and more just ahead in this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. In the midst of an overseas trade mission, Governor Asa Hutchinson spoke to reporters yesterday about his meetings with industry leaders in Germany and France. Via teleconference from Frankfurt, Germany, Governor Hutchinson said he's trying to quell anxiety among European business leaders who are concerned about the anti-globalist rhetoric of President Donald Trump.
Europe has always looked to the United States as the world leader in the economy, in terms of trade, and in terms of defense. And so they're very careful to the nuances of our dialogue, and anything that indicates a retreat from that causes them concern. So my message, I think, has really been timely for them and reassuring to them.
Governor Hutchinson says he's met with leaders of corporations that own a bromine production facility in El Dorado, as well as a group that owns a steel supply company. Governor Hutchinson also says he gave remarks to employees of Citigroup in Frankfurt at a town hall-style event. The governor's itinerary still includes a visit to Israel, where he has said he'll be meeting with leaders of technology companies. The governor has made nearly a half dozen foreign trade trips during his tenure as governor. On Capitol Hill yesterday, two Arkansas congressmen joined their colleagues in questioning intelligence officials about foreign attempts to compromise American voting systems in the 2016 election. In the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Tom Cotton opened his line of questioning of an FBI Assistant Director of Counterintelligence with this.
Since her election defeat, Hillary Clinton has blamed her loss on the Russians, Vladimir Putin, the FBI, Jim Comey, fake news, WikiLeaks, Twitter, Facebook, and my personal favorite, content farms in Macedonia. In her blaming her loss on these actors, has Hillary Clinton become an unwitting agent of Russians' goals in the United States?
I'm sorry, sir, but I'd rather not comment. It's just something.
I understand. It's just something I haven't given look at it from two different
any thought.
In the U.S. House Intelligence Committee, Arkansas 1st District Congressman Rick Crawford's questioning of a former Department of Homeland Security secretary centered on the capabilities of foreign agents in hacking a voting system.
For them to fully affect the outcome of the election in terms of manipulating numbers, would they not need to have some sort of complicit individual physically present to affect that?
I don't think I'm prepared to agree with that.
In the Senate Intelligence Committee, a DHS official told lawmakers the people affiliated with the Russian government attempted to hack voting systems in 21 states. A spokesman for the Arkansas Secretary of State's office says there is no evidence that voting systems in this state were hacked. And the city of Springdale is being recognized for efforts to improve literacy. The city was awarded the All-America City Award for programs devoted to helping young children achieve grade-level proficiency. Springdale was one of 15 cities to earn the award. It was cited for programs designed to reduce chronic absenteeism in elementary schools, reduce summer learning loss, and increase parent involvement in children's education.
Welcome to today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. I'm Paul Gatling. Ahead on the program, the future of wastewater treatment technology. It's happening right here in Northwest Arkansas. Also, a visit with Hugh Kincaid, a longtime business and community leader from Fayetteville, who is set to retire at the end of the month from the Bank of Fayetteville. We begin today, though, at the Noland Wastewater Treatment Plant in Fayetteville. That's where city officials recently showed off what they believe is the future of wastewater treatment technology. Earlier this month, officials held a ribbon cutting and gave tours at the plant of an upgraded disinfection system that more effectively and efficiently treats the city's wastewater before it is discharged back into the White River. It's called HIDAS and was built with proprietary technology developed by Fayetteville water technology firm Blue and Green. The system uses ozone to disinfect treated effluent, or discharge, as opposed to ultraviolet disinfection. Blue and Green, along with its project partners Pinnacle Ozone Solutions of Florida and PCI of California, announced the partnership with the city in November 2014. Construction and installation of the system was completed about a year ago, and Fayetteville is the only city in Arkansas using ozone to treat its wastewater. After several months of monitoring the data since the new system was installed, Fayetteville Utilities Director Tim Nyander said the city's expectations have been met, and it was time to celebrate the upgrade. You can check out more details on that story on our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. When we come back, a conversation with Fayetteville business and community leader Hugh Kincaid. Don't go away.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-comm.com.
Hugh Kincaid insists the third time will be the charm. Kincaid, who will turn 83 in September, is retiring from the Bank of Fayetteville effective June 30th. He has been the bank's senior vice president of its trust department since 2002, the same year he retired from a 39-year career at the University of Arkansas. An attorney by trade, he also retired from a 30-year career in private practice in 1993. He's also spent 4 years in the 60s as Fayetteville's elected city attorney, and voters also sent him to Little Rock for 2 terms as a state legislator in the 1970s. Kincaid has been recognized by numerous groups for his community involvement, and it would be fair to describe him as one of Fayetteville's most involved citizens. I spoke with him recently on a number of topics, including what his third retirement might look like, starting July 1st.
Well, that's a good question. I've really enjoyed being with the bank. It's been a joy. I never thought I would be here this long. When I retired from the university, I'd already retired from law practice several years before that. But I really enjoyed it. It was fascinating to be a part of the bank and the trust department especially. And so 15 years went by in a hurry. My thinking now, since this is my third retirement, is it's time to really seriously retire. And that's what I'm looking forward to. I hope to have a lot of time to spend with family and to do some things that, you know, you put off doing. And when you put off doing it as long as I have, you may never get around to doing it but at my age. But I'm looking forward to it. I'll probably do some volunteer things. I haven't decided exactly what, but I probably will volunteer for one or more charities to try to help them do some fundraising. When I was with the university, I managed the planned giving program. And I have some degree of expertise that I can maybe be useful to one or more charities to help them raise some funds.
And so you're Fayetteville born, Fayetteville bred, yes. Been here your whole life. So you've witnessed the evolution here from a sleepy mountain town to a vibrant city in the hills, and you've been involved with a lot of it, both public sector, private sector. What excites you the most about Fayetteville's direction these days?
Well, I think it's exciting. The university, of course, has been one of the major drivers for opportunity in this community, and it's also established the character of the community. I think that means so much to live here and in this atmosphere with the university, and so that makes Fayetteville unique in my book. I think the future is very bright. The university has grown significantly over the last 10-year period, and so the future, I think, for this community is exceptional.
And you're known for a lot of things in the city, but perhaps what most people would associate you with is your support of education. You know, why has that always been such an important issue for you?
Well, that's a good question. I have always felt strongly that education was the threshold for opportunity. I remember that I've portrayed a couple of times, several times, Archibald Yale. One of his primary goals way back when he was the second governor of Arkansas was the cost of education. When I went to the legislature in the early 70s, we didn't have public kindergartens in Arkansas. We had a few pilot programs just around various places in the state, but we didn't have it, and I thought that was vitally important, early childhood education. And so one of my missions was to try to get that for us in Arkansas. And the first session, I got it passed in the House and lost by one vote in the Senate. I got together with several organizations, including the League of Women Voters and University Women, and there was a early childhood organization, and we campaigned every time somebody was running for re-election or election to the House or Senate. We asked them for a commitment, and of course, Governor Bumpers was the governor, and he took it on as a priority too, made it an administration proposal, and so in the next session, the 73 session, we were able to get it passed for half day only. But it was surprising to me that there was so much opposition. And primarily it came from those districts that were going to be hard-pressed to come up with the classroom space and the teachers. I mean, I understand the economics of it. But we did manage to get it. And I passed it fairly easily in the House. And it was in the Senate that we failed the first time. The second time, I had a squeaker of a vote in the House. I passed it by one vote. So it was a near miss, but we got it. And gradually, of course, moved to full day.
Your opinion on Fayetteville High School, you know, you've seen Bentonville split to two schools, Rogers split to two schools, Springdale split to two schools, and you've been heavily involved with Fayetteville School District and the high school for a long time now. What is your opinion of one large Fayetteville High as opposed to splitting high schools?
I like it. I think we've made the right choice, right decision. It is a large school, but yet the character of the school after the reconfiguration of it, it's going to be fine. I think it's going to work well. And for this community, I think it's appropriate.
I've got more from my interview with Mr. Kincaid and a story published in the upcoming issue of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal. And that hits newsstands and online next Monday. And that does it for today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. Remember to follow our reporting of regional business news each and every day at nwabusinessjournal.com. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large. Yesterday on the program, we offered up a sound we had collected during some time spent in South Fayetteville this week, recorded near a temporary pond created when a low-lying area had been submerged by last weekend's rains. We asked for help identifying these sounds and offered up some vouchers for future Northwest Arkansas Naturals games, passes to Malco movie theaters, and a couple of KUAF koozies to a pair of randomly drawn emailers. First, no consensus, though almost every email with an answer went with an amphibian. Emily Bell says frogs, which was my suspicion. Brody Burnett of Fayetteville was more specific, the sheep frog. Cindy Martin from Lincoln says it sounds like the turtles she hears on her farm. Pat from Fayetteville suggests a gray tree frog. Our winners, by the way, randomly chosen from all of the emails that were sent to us. So our winners are the four natural vouchers that can be exchanged for tickets at Will Call for a future game, four Malco movie passes to any area Malco movie theater, and two KUAF koozies each. Our winners, Lindsay Hugan. Lindsay, I hope I pronounced that last name correctly. And Ashley Burns. Lindsay says she's no amphibian expert, but believes we heard Fowler's toad. She even provided a link from ArkansasFrogsAndToads.org for comparison. Ashley didn't offer up an answer to the mystery sound, but she did play along with my request to offer up other favorite sounds of summer. Hers, firecrackers and sprinklers. Firecrackers, because it reminds her her birthday is approaching. It's July 7th, friends of Ashley Burns. Thanks, everybody, for playing along, and keep those favorite sounds of summer coming. We'll include some of them in future shows the next few weeks. You can always reach us at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. This is Ozarks at Large. We have First Friday in Bentonville. There is a First Thursday in Fayetteville. There is now a First Tuesday in Fort Smith. Somewhere, somebody has a Last Tuesday that's art. Let's throw one more in the mix. Last Saturday, a variety show that happens when, Houston Hughes?
The last Saturday of every month.
Houston, would I say that you are the curator, coordinator, organizer?
Yes, all of the above, and host. So,
well, I want to ask you about the next last Saturday, but before that, I'm going to ask you about the previous last Saturdays. This was completely your brainchild?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I discovered Poetry Slam and fell in love with it when I was down at Hendrix College. And then after I finished at Hendrix, I had a couple of choices of where to move to. And I actually decided to come up here based on falling in love with some of the slam poetry that was coming out of here, specifically people like Doug Shields and Jeremy Sparkman. And so I moved up here, and they were doing a monthly Poetry Slam, but it wasn't garnering much traction in the community. It wasn't getting a whole lot of people out to the monthly events. And I, through a series of different interactions, started to fall in love with the idea of combining poetry with other art forms, whether it's music, whether it's dance, whatever it is, and started to think that maybe the way forward with slam, specifically around here, was to not just have a poetry show, but to have a poetry and music show, a poetry and dance show, start combining things like that. So I experimented with a couple of little shows like that. And then I went out to California, to the Bay Area, and in Oakland, I experienced this show called Tourette's Without Regrets, which is a wonderful show put on by Jamie DeWolf, and it's just kind of this breakneck-paced stage show where they're like, all right, 1 minute we've got burlesque, and 1 minute we've got two poems, and then 1 minute we've got this band who sets themselves on fire when they play, and something like that. And, you know, we don't quite have all of that around here, but I just fell in love with this idea of this super fast-paced show that had the poetry in it, but the poetry wasn't the focus. The poetry was something you gave to people to kind of hook them into that, but if they weren't interested in that, there was plenty of other stuff for them to see. So I came back here to Fayetteville after having seen that and sort of set about trying to figure out a way to do this, and we started out at the Fayetteville Underground Art Gallery in June of 2013 was our first full show, and we had more or less the same format we have now, which is four acts. We do three of them, a poetry slam, and then the final act, and each of the acts has a very short amount of time to perform. The first three acts only have 10 minutes. The last one has a little bit of leeway depending on how fast the show is running, but we try and make sure everything's moving very quickly, and we also don't have an open mic aspect to the show, which is unique amongst poetry slams. Most slams have an open mic at the beginning, and you know, as part of the fast-pacedness of the show, we want to make sure that anyone who comes in and performs feels like they're willing to compete. And as a result, I think that helps keep up the momentum of the show. And so we start the show and we don't stop for a second until it's over 2 hours later.
How can you tell if this sort of Ed Sullivan on speed approach, just, you know, entertainment, is actually maybe luring some people into slam poetry who otherwise wouldn't have seen it?
Well, I mean, two big things are we've gotten a bunch of new performance poets in the area, a bunch of new people, and not just from around here. One of the people who I've gotten the pleasure of working with who discovered our show and has come to every single one since, her name is Molly Sroges, and she's actually out of the Eureka Springs area, and she is just absolutely phenomenal. But prior to our show, she hadn't found a home. She'd just been kind of doing open mics around the area, and so now she's an integral part of our show. And also our crowds have gotten a lot larger. The very first show we did, we had our seven performers and our three poets, and we had maybe two or three other people in the audience, and that was mostly, you know, a family that had come along, partners that had come along. And now we moved our show at the beginning of this year to the American Legion Post here in Fayetteville, to the big sort of meeting ballroom that they have. And for our very first show there, we capped out at, I want to say, 150 plus artists and vendors.
Wow. Do you feel like there's a different sort of connection with a show that involves slam poetry? Because it's, if not interactive, it certainly seems, I don't know, more visceral for a reaction.
Yeah. So slam is this weird combination of good writing and good storytelling. You can't be great at slam if you're a good storyteller, but don't have the kind of really tight writing to back it up. You can also be a really great page poet, but if you don't have that thing in you that helps you engage with the audience. But there's also this sort of weird ethereal other thing, which is the audience interaction. You have to be able to engage them in everything that you do. Because an essential part of slam is the audience can interrupt you. They can yell. They can boo. They can try and boo you off stage if they want to. Or they can yell out lines of your poem if they love it and have heard it enough times that they know it. And you have to be able to not just deal with that, but to play off of it and to sort of take that energy that they give you. And if they're having a good time with your poem, you need to help that give your poem more energy. And if they aren't enjoying it, you need to be able to sort of act on the fly to re-engage them.
So engagement is a big key.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I want to ask you a little bit more about slam poetry. But first, what are the acts that will be coming along with slam on Saturday night?
Right. So this Saturday, we have Adam Cox, Ginger Doss, Colin Nelson, and Chasing Pictures.
Adam Cox, who for a long time was with Cletus Got Shot,
mm-hmm.
the band, and yes. and a song, what's the word I'm looking for? Prolific. When you really write a lot of songs?
Prolific.
Prolific. This is why I don't do slam poetry. A prolific songwriter.
He is, and he's one of the best songwriters in our area. I absolutely adore him because a lot of the... His lineage as far as songwriting goes back to the old protest songs and all that kind of stuff. And I absolutely love that because I'm a big fan of doing art to make a difference in your community.
So I know Adam. Tell me about the other folks.
So Ginger Doss moved here not too long ago. She's a keyboard player. She's very active in the LGBT community around the area. And she's done a bunch of fundraisers in the area. And she's just a phenomenal keyboard player. Colin Nelson is from Comedians NWA, the local comedy group. And we usually have one member of their group every month. Sometimes we have an improv group or something else. But regularly, we have a member of Comedians NWA come over. And we try and help promote each other's shows through that. And then Chasing Pictures is a four-piece act out of Fayetteville. They've played George's a couple of times. They're just a solid group. And we had our first three acts sort of set up, and we said we sent out a message on Facebook that was we're looking for a really big energy act to close the show this time. And they sent me a couple samples, and I was hooked.
You're in.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, I want to ask you about slam poetry. I saw you perform at the Black Apple Awards, and you had this wonderful piece about capital punishment, a historic, which included history, a historic incident of a juvenile being executed through the electric chair.
Mm-hmm.
It's rapid fire. How many times do you have to perform that yourself in front of a mirror before you're confident enough to get all the words right?
Oh, thousands.
And I would.
Thousands.
It shows.
And it's... It's not a matter of you write the piece, you edit the piece, and then at some point you say, okay, I'm going to start memorizing this now, and then you a few weeks later have it memorized. It's part of it is writing a piece that sounds like it's something that would come from you. When I'm coaching people on slam, what I tell them all the time is when you're writing, the voice that comes out should sound like you. It should sound like the very best possible version of you, but sort of the construction of the words and the way they're put together. It shouldn't sound high and mighty Shakespeare. It shouldn't sound like you're trying to throw your voice into someone else's personality. It should be your voice at its best, at its most honest, at its most intense, but still yours. And so part of the writing process is writing something that's maybe a little bit easier to memorize because you're like, yeah, this is a thing that I would say. But also part of the editing process is going out to open mics and reading it and getting people's feedback. And reading it to yourself a lot when you write. I mean, all of my writing process is basically I'll bang out some lines when I have them, and then I'll stand up and pace my room and just say those lines out loud and then just try and keep talking and see what naturally comes out of my mouth next. And so bouncing back and forth between that and research. And so, like, I'll read up on, for that one, it was reading up a bunch on the death penalty and then pacing my room and just talking things out. And then I'll get a couple lines and write them out, and then I'll sit down and read some more and just kind of repeat that cycle. And that makes memorization a lot easier because I've been saying the piece the entire time I've been writing it. It basically came out of my mouth. It just happened to pass through my computer screen on the way to the audience.
But there's still a high wire act here because it's incredibly intense, and you've chosen every word specifically.
Yes.
If you stumble, it will show because then this word doesn't maybe reflect back to that, or there isn't a play of language like you intended.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, There are obviously going to be some parts where if you miss them, if you happen to exchange one word for another word, if you have your wits about you and have done the piece enough, you can continue on. But there are, as you say, if your writing is very tight, there are often going to be references, whether big imagery references back to something you said earlier in the poem, or even if it's just a word. Like in that particular piece, I talk in one part about us sort of justifying the death penalty by turning it into a magic trick. We lock them in a box and then make them vanish, right? And then later in the piece, I refer back to the magic of spinning murder into mercy. And I'm specifically choosing the word magic there because I want to refer back to that thing that happened in the piece a minute and a half ago. Because I also say you only want to do it if you can do it blindfolded, which refers back to the George Steine incident. I say you don't want to refer to admit to the elephant in the room, which is a reference back to Topsy, which is how the piece starts. And so there are
Topsy, an elephant that was actually executed.
Yes, that was executed in one of our first shows. That electrocution, that electricity could be used to execute people. You can't say electrocution because electrocution is technically a portmanteau of electric and execute.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So last Saturday is this Saturday. What time do the events begin?
So we open the doors at 7 o'clock and we start on time at 7:30. We do not start a minute after 7:30. And that's because there are too many shows, I think, that you go to that they say they start at 7:30 and then they start at 7:45-ish. And then people don't start showing up until 7:45-ish. And so they're like, oh, we'll start 8-ish now. None of that. So we open the doors at 7 and we start the show at 7:30.
If someone's not familiar with the venue, where is it?
So the American Legion Post 27 is on Curtis Avenue just off of MLK. So if you take College South and then you take a left onto MLK, Curtis will be on your right just before you hit that weird three-way intersection. So it's right down there on the southeast side of town.
Is there catfish?
Yes, there is. Oh, my goodness. That was one of the best things about moving to this venue is that they have everything there is so, so cheap. And it's because, you know, their goal is to keep the place open for veterans, right, to keep the bar open. And the bar and the performance area are actually completely separate, which is part of why we can keep this an all-ages event. But they have some incredibly cheap and yet delicious food. We're talking $3, $4 catfish burgers, all that kind of stuff, and really cheap alcohol if you're a drinker. I mean, I think the sodas are free if you're not, or they're 50 cents or something like that. And it's, you know, it helps both of us out because we were looking for a venue that was large enough to both host the show and something we'd wanted to do for a long, long time, ever since the show started, was also have a crafts component to it. And we had never had the space for that before. And with this venue, we not only have our show happening up front, but in the back, we put local crafts vendors. And we're always looking for more of those. And we have basically the tables are open. And anyone who wants to come in and do that, we don't ask for any sort of pay for that. We just ask that they help promote the show. And so we've got, you know, on one side, we've got the super cheap bar, we've got local crafts, we've got live art going on right next to the stage, and then we've got the stage show going on. And like I say, we start at 7:30. We do not let up until we end at 9:30.
No intermission.
There's no intermission. There's no smoke break. There's no anything because I'm people need to stay engaged. People need to stay high energy.
This sounds like vaudeville to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's inspired by that.
Yeah. And what about this CD that you brought with you? Growing Up, Not Old.
Yes, that is a CD that I produced last year because I was 29, just about to turn 30, and something in my brain went off and was like, oh, God, have I done anything with my life yet? And obviously the answer is yes, but having something really tangible to sort of prove it is great. So I went out and about half of those pieces are old pieces, and half of them are pieces I wrote specifically for that album. And for all of them, I found some kind of audio component. For a lot of them, it was music. So I've got Randall Shreve on there on one piece. I've got Sean James. I've got there's a choir made up of a bunch of locals, including Jackson Jennings from the Jackson Jennings Five. And they actually provide the choir, which is the background for Rich People Church, which I actually got a full church band to play on. So it was an experience both in putting something down and also collaborating with other artists in the area. And because so much of slam poetry is that interaction that we talked about earlier, it felt like I couldn't just put the words, I couldn't just record myself doing these pieces and put it on the album. There had to be some kind of something extra. So that's part of why I partnered with those musicians. But also, I've met so many amazing people through the year putting on Last Saturday, just so many great performers, and the interaction that you get when you put two outstanding performers in the same room or you get a whole group together is just one of my favorite things. And we have a performing arts community here in Fayetteville that does outstanding things anytime you put a couple of them in a room. And it's just such a great feeling.
CD available at Last Saturday shows?
Yes, it's available at Last Saturday shows. It's also available online. You can download it for free and then pay for it later if you like it. And if you don't like it, you don't have to. That's kind of the model of art that I believe in. That's what we do at Last Saturday, too. Every Last Saturday show is free. And the performers are also performing for free. They're hoping that you'll come see their next show or you'll buy their CD. We also videotape the entire show, put it up for free on Fayetteville Public Access TV as well as on YouTube. And, you know, that's the goal of the show is to be this – to create this community of artists who are supporting each other.
All right. Last Saturday. We know when it is. Houston Hughes, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
On the next Fresh Air, recent Russian cyber attacks in Ukraine on the power grid, government agencies, banks, and how they may be tests for cyber attacks on the U.S. Our guest will be Andy Greenberg, who writes about this in a cover story for Wired magazine. We'll also talk about Russian cyber attacks on the U.S., and he'll tell us about driving a hacked car. Join us.
Fresh Air twice every weekday, 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3. 91.3 is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, celebrating the American spirit by uniting the power of art with the beauty of nature. The museum and its restaurant, 11, are open until 9 p.m. on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Online reservations for dinner available at crystalbridges.org/11. 91.3 is supported in part by David Adams Fine Jewelry, offering design, creation, and repair of all jewelry in silver, gold, and platinum. All work performed in-house. Diamond and colored stone designs are on display at the downtown Fayetteville Square Gallery and online at davidadams.com. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Hinesville. We'll end today's show with music from Chucky Wags and the Company of Rags. They're going to be live at Chelsea's Corner Cafe and Bar in Eureka Springs Saturday night, beginning at 9. Chucky has a great new CD called Junkyard Charlie. We'll end with his song Dancing Shoes, recorded inside our very own Furman Garner Performance Studio a couple of years ago. Chucky Wags, Saturday night at Chelsea's. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening. Right here, right now. So tell them girls to put on them dancing shoes. Tell the band to start playing the blues. Tell the man shuffling cards. Tell me when they start bartending. What have you got for a broken heart? Until last call, and everyone's got troubles, and that's why we're all right here. Plus whiskey and the beer, you know it ain't so bad after all, man, it ain't so bad. So just tell them girls to put on them dancing shoes. Tell the band to start playing the blues. Tell the man shuffling cards. Tell me when they start bartending.